Welcome to Smart in the City, the Babbel podcast. I am your host, Tamlin Shimizu, and really at Babbel, we aim to connect the players in the smart city industry with high quality information and ideas through our platform and services. This podcast is really an extension of this goal and mission to drive the change for a better urban life. First, a quick announcement from Babbel. We are delighted to announce a new interactive online training course, Smarter Connected Places, Experiential Learning for Tomorrow's Urban Leaders. You can find the link for more information and how to register in the show notes. Make sure to register by the 14th of October for an early bird discount. Now on to our regular programming. So today I have a very special guest with us, all the way from Greece, my second Greek guest on the show so far. And her name is Katerina Nikolopoulou. And she works for the Greek-speaking branch of the Civitas Initiative, which is the CiviNet Greece Cyprus, as the network manager. But she really does it all. So welcome, Katerina.
Hello, Tamlin. Nice to see you again and to be here with you.
Yeah, always lovely to see you. And yeah, thanks so much for coming on the show. I'm really looking forward to hearing about a very special project to you. And that's going to be the subject of our podcast, really. And that project is called InCircle. And it's an Interreg Med project co-financed by the European Regional Development Fund. And it's all about supporting insular and low-density areas in the transition towards a more circular tourism economy. So, and you're working as a financial manager for that project?
Yeah, exactly. But not just that's my main, let's say, role, but because the CiviNet, the network of CiviNet has the communication work package, is the lead of the communication work package. Let's say that we do a little bit of everything.
Yeah. And I feel like that's your role with a lot of things, is you just doing it all, right?
We're trying.
Yeah, that's my experience so far. So, really interested to dig into this project. I think it's a new topic for maybe not a topic that's talked about enough, or a topic that's quite so in the forefront of when we speak about smart cities. Really excited to learn more about it also. Maybe to get us started before we really dig in, I was wondering if you know of a kind of fun fact or something about circular tourism economy. Do you have one in mind?
Well, I do. I don't know if it's exactly like a fun fact, but it's a very interesting fact, which is that recycling 1 ton of solid waste can pay $101 more in salaries than disposing of it in a landfill. And if you think about it, if you find a way to reuse it, and actually you can increase significant jobs, the number of jobs. Like for every 1,000 ton of municipal solid waste, you can provide 80 jobs.
Wow! Yeah, that is that is fun. I mean, it's interesting. No, but it's a good fact, and inspiring to know, like, to look at it from the economic lens, right? To see how we can really use these type of solutions also to boost our economy. Maybe to get us started on your background, can you explain just briefly about CiviNet Greece Cyprus and what it does?
Of course. CiviNet, as you said, CiviNet Greece Cyprus is the Greek-speaking branch of Civitas, of the Civitas Initiative, which is developed from the European Commission. So in a way, we are part of the European Commission, all of the CiviNet. And here in Greece, we are trying to... Actually, we have more than 120 cities, municipalities as members, and our main goal is to promote sustainable mobility. in the Greek and the Cypriotic community. Of course, through that, in order to do that, we are helping the municipalities. These days, mostly with the SUMP, the SAMS, the Sustainable Urban Mobility Plans. But we also we work for them for other projects, for European projects as well. And this is our main goal, the, let's say, the prosperity of our cities and to make our cities better, especially the Greek cities, because as most of the people know, we lack of infrastructure. We lack in a lot of things. So I think that it's like a good goal to try to help the Greek cities.
Yeah, absolutely. So what you lack in now, you excel in tourism, right? It's a huge tourism destination.
Exactly.
So I guess that's where this comes in, is trying to make a circular tourism economy, like trying to make it sustainable, right? So can you talk a little bit about what is a circular tourism economy?
Yeah, of course, I will start that. Yes, Greek is a very touristic place, but all the Mediterranean area is one of the most touristic areas in the world. So you can understand that all the flow of the tour, the huge flow of the tourist that comes usually in the summer creates a lot of problems for those places, and they change the place actually a lot. It's, let's say, if you go to a Greek island, it's way better during this. It's way different during the summer and way different during the winter. So you can understand that there's a very huge need to balance this this difference, this gap. So circular tourism works like, let's say, how... Everyone knows recycling. Everyone knows that it's better to use something and then not just throw it out, not just throw it away, but find a way to use it again. Let's say that this very simple example is like how circular tourism works. You need to find ways to reuse, to renew, to regenerate, and to be more innovative in order to balance exactly what I said, to balance the difference between the different seasons in this kind of areas.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. So it's really a balancing act. And you have to balance a lot, I suppose, with that huge influx of people coming in. Also, people when they're on holiday are just rude, aren't they? They just leave a bunch of trash around and they're not the most respectful guests a lot of times when they come in. So I guess my next question is also, so the project, what areas does it really focus on? Like, does it focus mostly on waste management? Is it all related to also energy, water, mobility? What would you say are the biggest topic areas?
Well, there are four pillars. And at least this is how we perceive it at the InCircle project. It's the water, it's waste, it's energy, and it's mobility. And I think that if you really think about it, with these four pillars, you cover everything in an area, and everything that not only, of course, the tourists, but of course, the inhabitants of a place are using, are doing. It's everything in their everyday life.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So this project also focuses really on the insular and low density areas. So what are the specific challenges related to that versus a more high dense area?
Well, usually in a, you know, in a place, let's say in an island, but in a big island, or in a place that in a city that it's next to the sea and it's a big city, usually you have the infrastructure and the policies that they are not there only for the tourists. They are there for the inhabitants in general and for the prosperity and the well-being of their inhabitants in general. because those places, they are not active only in summer or only in during seasons of holidays. So but in places where they are smaller or with lower with fewer inhabitants, or that you can see that its activity of this area is more intense during summer or during periods of vacation, as I said before, you can see that there's a lack of a lot of things. And it's not just that they don't have the infrastructure or the policies or the measures or the good practices or the good examples, but they're usually, most of these places, they are so far behind the rest of the cities that it's difficult for the community during the rest of the period. You can see that there's a lack in, let's say, in water. At least in Greek islands, water is a very huge issue. You can see that during summer, even if you're a tourist and you are to an island, during the days that you will be visiting this island, you might also experience lack of water, like small breaks during the day or for a whole day or stuff like that. So you realize that this is something very important and very huge, not to have water at an entire area or even at an entire island. So it's very crucial. It's very crucial to try to balance this kind of, let's say, not just differences, but inequalities, or even in a way, injustices, to have places that work like that. And to be attractive just for the tourists to go and do their holidays, while there's people over there that they live and experience these places on a daily basis, and of course, all year long.
Yeah, so really building an infrastructure and a place that's really for the citizens, the residents of the area, not just for the tourists, but having them also in cohesion, right? Yeah, really cool, really interesting. So what can you talk about with which cities and other areas have you involved in the project so far? And what have you seen have been like the similarities that they face and also kind of the differences?
So we have, in general, we are 17 partners, but the project partners that we started the project, they were from 6 countries: Greece, Cyprus, Spain, Italy, Albania, and Malta. So there's a very huge variety of the stakeholders, from the private sector to regions and cities and universities, and NGOs, and a lot of different type of partners and stakeholders. And I think that this is the best way to try to approach such a concept, because as you can see, it's not focusing only on one area, only on one topic, but it's a more holistic approach. So of course you need the different types of stakeholders in order to achieve that and to have let's say all the voices heard.
Yeah, and that's really kind of the ambition of an Interreg project, right, is to span different stakeholders, span different regions and countries. But I imagine the countries you name are quite diverse. So what do you think are the biggest differences that the different countries face? For example, in comparison to Greece, how are the challenges in Spain different? Or what do you think?
Well, I think that let's start with a cliché that even in between places that they are more let's say well organized to places that they lack of this organization, you can always see good and bad examples. And there's no perfect place or something like that. Every place has its uniqueness and its own strengths and problems. So I think that at least as a Greek partner, it was, let's say, a little bit disencouraging to realize when you thought of what kind of pilot actions are you going to do, or when we helped the region of Attica for their circular strategy. It was really disappointing to see that it's not just the lack of infrastructure, but it's lack of data, it's lack of commitment, it's lack of a lot of things, which you can see that it's happening in different levels, and not just, let's say, that the municipality doesn't want to, or the region doesn't want to change. But it's like a combination of everything. It's a combination of the mentality of the people. It's, of course, the political commitment. So it's a little bit disencouraging to when you try to face a problem like that and to approach it. When you try to think, now where are we starting from? So, and this is... I said this because I wanted to connect that I think not like the differences, but the most common thing between all of these areas is the data collection, is the lack of data and how to collect the data. Mm. I think this is the most common thing for everyone. Even in places that you can see they are doing already something towards that direction to have mechanisms in order to collect data better. You still think you can still see that we have a long way to go.
Yeah, and I think that's echoed in many, many places from what I know, also that we see. But I guess, how do we overcome that challenge? How do we start overcoming that challenge? Just start collecting data, putting more technologies in place. What do you think is the best way to start, like, solving that challenge?
Well, I think that data is extremely important, and we should start from there, because without the data, then... it's like you're going blind.
Yeah, shooting in the dark. Yeah,
exactly. You don't know where to start, what to do, what are the, let's say, your weak points in order to improve them. It's not just, you don't just need to just know that, okay, I have a problem there. You need to know why, you need to know how, you need to know how this problem was created. So you actually need data. And if you have that, and I think that nowadays we are in the 21st century, it's quite easy. It's not just easy to collect them, but it's more easy than years ago, because nowadays you have the technology and you have the tools, and so many different tools in order to collect to collect data. So I think let's start from there. And if you have that, then in one way or the other, everything will fall in place, because after that, you know what you need. You know not just what you need, but in which areas you need to focus. So it's let's say it's going to make your life easier. And when you actually see the numbers, it's also like a wake-up call. Because if you don't see the numbers, you know, ignorance is a bliss, you know.
Yeah.
But when you actually see the numbers, then you can have a better overview of the topic you try to approach. And, you know, after that, the one thing will follow the other.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've seen that time and time again in our experiences as well, that also collecting the right data, right? So there's something to be said also, not just for collecting data just for the sake of it, but really actually pinpointing what do we really need to know and moving forward from there. So yeah, I love that point. Do you think that's one of the biggest lessons learned from this project? Or what would you say, like, taking away the lessons from this project, what can you, you know, recommend and give advice for others that are tackling similar challenges?
Well, yeah, I will start from data, but I will say something more in general, more generic, that usually when you try to approach topics like that, you are not going to invent the wheel. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of practices, there's a lot of good examples out there, and there, most of the things that also the INSEC is focusing on, besides, of course, the methodology that we've created, or the knowledge platform, or the participatory tools, it's all of this knowledge that we've learned, is that most of the practices, they're already somewhere being used. I mean, recycling is something that we already know. In islands, to reuse, let's say, the rainwater, it's something that it's happening through the ancient years. So we are not reinventing the wheel or anything like that. Is to know, to understand the problem that you are facing, and to have the data and to seek for solutions that they have been already applied somewhere else. And usually this is going to help you because it's going to show you also the indicators or the problems they faced when they dealt with that problem or whatever. You can have so many good advice and consultation when you are not shooting blank, as you said before, but when you try to be more dedicated and to try to pinpoint those good examples and good practices and try to see how this is going to fit in your case, in your situation. If you start from there, because there's also no way to go big overnight. You're not going to change everything overnight. All of these things, all of these issues, you need time. And you also need to be very committed to actually make the change and not just start with it and get lost somewhere in the way. So especially with circular tourism, you need a more holistic approach and not just an approach from the municipality or from a region or from a country. You need to approach everyone, all the stakeholders, the community, the tourists, because also the tourists need to be more and better informed.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
it doesn't matter if I'm in a place and I'm living in a place like that, and okay, the municipality is going to approach me and is going to, let's say, train me or inform me about these kind of issues. And I'm going to help them in this journey, let's say, towards a sustainable economy and sustainable tourism and circular tourism. But the people that they are going to visit my place need also to respect that and to get better informed and see how it will also help their experience there if they engage also, if they join also this movement, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really interesting point, to involve the tourists and communicate better with them as well. So also, I have a couple of tough questions, maybe tough, I don't know. I think you're fairly well-equipped. So I guess the question is, what are really the limitations of such a project, right? The project ends soon, I believe. And what happens after the project ends? And really, what is the limitation there?
Well, I think that, you know, as a Greek person, I'm very good at finding all the problems at a solution. So the limitations could be a lot and very different regarding your way of viewing the things.
Yeah.
But I think that to be honest, as the project is ending, at least from my perspective, they are going to be not just the people and the partners that worked at the at this project, but the people that they learned somehow from our experience, or they experienced it itself in a way through our events or our webinars, our trainings, or everything that we've done during the project. That they are going to keep pursuing this this way of life, this these good practices, and we during the in order to do the circular strategy of the region of Attica, we did a 3-event at the island of Aegina, which is very close to Athens. And we were super excited to see that there were so many people interested in this topic, and not just stakeholders from the city, but also from the citizens and from the community, a lot of different stakeholders. And their interest was so high that after the event, they were asking if we could do this like an annual thing to get together and talk about this issue, and to pressure not just the region of Attica, but the cities themselves, and even if we could do it in a governmental level, that we could do it at the national level, that we could do it also there. They encourage us to do it because they see that they value actually what circular tourism is and what it can bring to the area, what it can bring also to the citizens and to the tourists, because especially these places, they feel it like in their flesh, mm-hmm. what it is to live in a place like that. And of course, they want to make better conditions for their lives. But of course, they want to attract tourists. They don't want to marginalize them or anything. But in order to do that, there's a very huge need of cooperation and of collaboration between all of them. So they also start to see the importance of circular economy and of circular tourism and of sustainable economy and sustainable tourism. So I think that no matter our obstacles and no matter what the big issues will be in order to continue in that road, the people are committed and the stakeholders are committed to keep on that route, to keep on that path. So I don't think that it's the barriers that they are going to face are important, because we are mm-hmm. facing barriers in whatever we are going to do. So I think that if they pressure and if we pressure towards a direction, we will be able to deal with everything, like with all the barriers and all the problems and everything.
Very positive. Very positive. I love the spirit. So one last question in our main kind of interview part, and that's a bit critical on, can tourism actually really be sustainable? What do you think?
I think so, yeah. Because, as I said, this 3-day event on Aegina Island, we did actually do, let's say, our work and vacation at the same time in a very sustainable and circular way. We went there using, not by cars, but with bicycles. And while we were there, we used bicycles and we did hiking. We go for hiking and we were trying, of course, at every place that we went to eat that there were no leftovers, or the leftovers, they're going to be used in a way again. Even for animals or something like that. And during our stay there, we try not to use plastic bottles. So even from a small point of view, there's always something you can do. So I think that there's definitely that it's very possible and doable to actually achieve sustainable and circular tourism.
Good. I hope so. I hope so. I can see both sides of the argument, honestly. I love to travel personally. These days, I mostly travel for work. I do try to travel in a way that's more circular and try to be conscious of these decisions. But I do notice, when I'm traveling, I use a lot more when I'm on the road than when I'm at home. It's just harder to do these things. Maybe you get more takeout boxes or whatever it might be, right? So I think a little bit falls on us, like the travelers, right? But it also falls on the cities and the regions to make it more easily accessible to make these decisions as well. So good. I hope, I wish you all the best with all of this. I'm really excited also to someday go to Greece and see the islands. I've been to Athens actually with you. Thank you for that invite also. I was in Greece because Katarina invited me, by the way. So now we will move on to our last segment. It's a fun segment called Trial and Error. Trial and error. What went wrong? What mistakes were made along the way? And more importantly, what lessons were learned? I think we touched on this a bit, but maybe you have one misstep, or it could be a funny misstep, or it could be a not funny misstep. It doesn't matter. But maybe you have some kind of misstep in the project that you were like, ooh, we should have done that differently. Do you have anything?
Well, to be honest, because of the InCircle project, the lifetime of the InCircle project was during the pandemic. I think that if it wasn't this situation, we would have more do's and don'ts.
Yeah.
Because we would be, more out there in those places, in those cities, that they also did the pilot actions in order to see what went right or what went wrong. But at least from what we've experienced until now, I can say that a lot of things went wrong. Went right. Sorry. Went right.
Hey, I think things going wrong are also not bad. In my viewpoint, the things going bad is where you learn the most lessons. So it's also okay. But
no. That's true. That's very true. But that's not what I wanted to say.
Oh, okay. Good. A lot of things went right.
Yeah, a lot of things went right, and you could see that especially from the cities that they did the pilot actions, the city of Larnaca, Rethymno, Himara, Palma, and Gozo. The pilot actions that they did, they were very accepted from the community and from the people, and also from the tourists. So I think that those actions were, I could easily say that they were a success. And in some cases, I think a very huge one. But for the, let's say, the things that went wrong and what we can do better, I think that this is something that we've experienced more in an organization level, And especially while working on the regional and national strategies, that you can see that there is a lack of I'm going to need a minute. Sorry.
No worries.
It's not that common for the regions and also national level to have already policies and plans in order to tackle this kind of problems. Mm-hmm. So you can see that at some times there might be some recommendations or even some laws, but you can see that they're not actually implemented. So I think that this is the most, one thing that is wrong and we need to change it. And yeah. This happened exactly, and this that exactly was the reason why we made these strategies, the circular strategies, mm-hmm. not only for the municipalities, but for the regions. And that's why we also selected those six extra territories to replicate these strategies and to try to make one for themselves.
Yeah, good. Thanks so much for sharing. And now is the last question. And that is a recurring question that we ask every single guest. And the question is, what is a smart city to you?
Okay, I think a smart city for me, it's not a city that that depends only on technology. A smart city for me is a city that can provide solutions sometimes they might not have to do anything with technology or something super duper innovative, but to provide with solutions that works for the place that you are at. Mm-hmm. Because that's the most important thing. If it works and it works well, then that's all you need. You don't always have to reach for the most, difficult solution or the most complicated one, or even a solution that it's entirely something technological. Sometimes, or maybe something very simple is the best way to go. So I think that for me, this is a smart city.
Yeah, perfect. I agree with you there. So yeah, with that, our time is out. That went by quickly for me. Hopefully it did for you too. thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me here. And to be honest, I thought that this is going to be super, a very stressful situation for me, but you made it so easy and the time did actually flew by. So thank you for this. And be sure that you personally, but also the Bubble team in general, we'll also have another invitation from me and from Sivina to come again to Greece and to experience yourself the Greek islands and what circular tourism might be.
I will gladly take that invitation sometime. So thank you so much. And thanks to all of our listeners. Don't forget, you can always create a free account on babel-smartcities.eu to find out more about smart city projects, solutions, implementations, and more. So thank you all. Thank you all for listening. I'll see you at the next stop on the journey to a better urban life.